Welcome back to the Bonfire Podcast, where we talk about the UFC and mixed martial arts with those closest to the fight game. I am your host, longtime MMA reporter and MMA junkie senior reporter, Mike Bon. Hope everyone out there is doing well. UFC 320 Fight Week is upon us, a huge one Saturday at T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas. Of course, in the main event, Alex Pereira looking to regain the UFC light heavyweight championship from Magomed Ankalaev. That rematch of their fight at UFC 313 in March, won by Ankalaev. We will see how things are different this time around. In the co-headliner, Mirab Dvalishvili looks to continue his epic year, his historic year, with title defense number 3, this time against Corey Sandhagen. Very much looking forward to seeing how that one unfolds. The featured bout is epic as well. Yuri Prohazka, Khalil Roundtree throwing down the key light heavyweight fight might determine who fights the main event winner, who emerges with the belt, but not if Carlos Alberg has anything to say about it. We saw him pick up a massive win, his 9th straight in the light heavyweight division against Dominic Reyes this past weekend in the UFC Perth main event. So it's all coming together a big time at light heavyweight. Very much appreciate Rashad Evans last week joining me to break it all down. If you missed that episode, definitely go back. A lot of great analysis about Pereira versus Ankalaev 2 and Prohazka versus Roundtree. We're going to get more into that today. Of course, pay-per-view week here. We got to break it all down. Some stuff has happened since I spoke to Rashad last. So very curious to get the thoughts and opinions of our guests today on all of that, the two title fights, and even more. It is going to be the return of the diamond, Dustin Poirier. Yes, ESPN analyst, former interim UFC lightweight champion, now retired, soon to be father once again. So exciting times in the life of Dustin Poirier. We're going to kind of get an update from him on how he's been enjoying retirement and then everything going on with UFC 320. Some talk about the lightweight division, which is in a bit of a slow pattern right now, not a ton of fights booked in the top 15. So we'll get Dustin's thoughts on who should fight who at 155 pounds. No better man to give an opinion, all that stuff. So loaded show today, very much looking forward to it. I'll be headed to Las Vegas probably by the time you guys are listening to this, and a huge week in store, not only UFC 320, Dana White's Contender Series I'll be at. There's a UFC BJJ event, a lot of other media activities going on. So it's going to be slam packed. We'll have lots of coverage, hopefully here, certainly over on MMA Junkies. So be sure to keep up with all that. For now, I'm going to take a quick break and we'll be right back with Dustin Poirier. Back here now on the Bonfire Podcast, returning guest, one of our favorites is Mr. Dustin Poirier. Dustin, how are we doing, man?
Good, man. Living life. How about you? How you doing? Newly married. Life is good, right?
Yeah, can't complain one bit. It's been, it was so much energy, so much looking forward to it. And then when it passes, it's kind of a calm after the storm, but we're going to do the honeymoon in December. So it's
exciting. Oh, nice, man. It's
something to be excited for coming up here.
For sure, for sure.
Yeah, man. Well, what about you? I know it's been like a little over 2 months since the retirement fight. It seems like you're very busy doing a lot of stuff, but we talked to you like so soon after it. You were still kind of in the middle of the storm. How's things now that everything has kind of passed and you're settled into life?
Good, man. Yeah, we sat down the day after. Crazy. Ate some good food and sat down. Staying busy, mostly trying to keep my mind busy, bro. That's it. Just staying busy.
Yeah, are you out of the drug testing pool, or are they still coming and bothering you, or are you good?
No, I'm out.
You're out.
They actually, the other, like maybe a week ago, they sent me a message saying I needed to update my whereabouts, and I'm like, I'm retired. I'm not in the pool anymore.
That's funny. Yeah, we knew that was coming. Have you? I know you watched the fight like the night of. Do you even bother watching the fight back with Max since then, or do you get all you need to like that night of?
Yeah, maybe in a few more months, maybe like. I will watch it again, but I haven't watched the full fight. I've seen clips, of course, but I haven't watched the full fight since when we got back to the Airbnb that night.
Yeah, one of the clips that I love that I think you reshared, I'll share it here now, but where you guys were counting the jabs at the end of the third round. Here, I'm playing it now, right here. What was going on here?
Just having some fun, man. I landed like 3 or 4, and he told me, he was like, nah, that was one. That was one. I was like, oh, fair enough.
That's fine. Yeah, that was a great moment. Yeah, man. So you're good. You're happy. You're content. And you've kind of got your closure.
Yeah. I mean, to go out like that at home with everybody in attendance who I care about and, in the state of Louisiana, just as perfect as it could get. You know, it doesn't get, for me, it doesn't get any bigger than that. And to go out with an opponent like Max, who's a champion and a great person, you know, outside of the ring, it was just an honor for me, man. I felt super grateful for the whole experience of going into that last fight. And since then, Max sent me the gloves he wore that night. He signed them. I signed them. We auctioned them off through my foundation. I think we raised like $9,000. We're going to round it up with the foundation and donate $10,000. But I need to reach out to Max and find out where he thinks that money would do the best work in Hawaii. We're going to do something in Hawaii with $10,000. So thanks, Max. And Hawaii, like I've been saying, you guys have a great champion.
Yeah, I love that. What about your fight kit? I know you had said maybe like Theo Vaughn was talking about maybe buying it. Did that happen or did you do something else?
Yeah, no, the fight kit sold. Theo bought it. He said he's going to frame it. Yeah, we're going to roll that money into the next big thing we have is Thanksgiving. You know, that takes a lot of all hands on deck and takes a lot of money to get all those meals prepared and stuff. So that's the next big thing we have going on with the foundation.
Yeah. Do you feel comfortable sharing how much he bought it for, or is that between you guys?
I'd have to ask my wife. I don't even know the number offhand, honestly. Okay.
Cool. Well, that's very awesome of him. I mean, we know what a big fan of his you are of you he is. So I'm sure he's
both vice versa. Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome, man. Well, you've been killing it, you know, since then. Saw you working the desk at one event, and I don't know, hopefully more stuff coming up. What do you think? They just announced this morning this deal for the Zuffa Boxing, 12 events on Paramount. Like, would you want to do boxing analysis as well, or do you just mostly have your focus on MMA?
No, bro. I would like to do either MMA or boxing. I love both sports. I can talk about both sports. I spend a lot of time in MMA gyms, a lot of time in boxing gyms, and I'm a huge fan of both. So I just want to get the reps, get in front of the camera, you know. Yeah. With this whole Paramount deal, I'm not sure. That's what everybody's been asking me, like, what show are you working next, or are they bringing you back? And honestly, I don't know. It's like I've been worked my way up with the ESPN people behind the scenes to start getting on the desk and try to improve every time. And I'm, you know, after each show, I talk to them what they think I can improve on, and I do. I put in the work. I want to get better at it, but I need the reps. And I don't know who to talk to now that the Paramount switch is happening. I'm pretty sure the UFC is going to be in-house producing all the content and then putting it on Paramount. But I don't know what's going on, but I'm here. I'm here if they need me.
Yeah, I think usually the UFC makes the calls on which talent will still be coming over. So I feel good about your future when it comes to that, because we've seen kind of the transition between eras, between Fox and ESPN. It's all kind of being the same people, and talking to the other people, I think they're kind of in the same boat as you, just hoping it kind of parlays over. So we'll see what happens. But we'll give you some reps here today, Dustin. Let's get into some things that are going on. Don't want to talk too much about UFC Perth last weekend, but I am curious from like the fighter's perspective on one thing that did happen in the Neil Magny versus Jake Matthews fight. Obviously kind of a big controversy. Gets the submission in, referee thinks Neil's out, the fight goes on. I'll play the clip here. He says we're gonna keep going, and then Neil Magny wins by submission. Jake Matthews and his team have said they're gonna file an appeal. We know those don't often work out in the sport. We'll see if he has a case, but I want to get your take on this quickly though. I'm gonna play the clip here of that end of the round, and we'll be muted here, so just wait till it's over and we'll get some thoughts. There.
5 to go in the round. Neil Magny is out.
No.
And he's saying he doesn't. Jim Perdios is calling it. Goodness he stepped gracious. In before the horn sounded.
No. That was not good.
Immediately protested.
Yeah, you got it.
The fight's still on.
Tough one, man. I was watching live. It was a weird moment.
Yeah, so it's always interesting, and I can't speak on any authority of what it's like to be in that cage. I can speak on getting choked out because you did that to me. So, like, I don't know. I feel like for when you're in there, like, you got to at least let the arm fall. You don't need to do, like, pro wrestling style where you drop it 3 times or anything. But, like, his hand was still somewhat up as the referee. Don't you feel like you should at least yank on a few times, all that stuff?
In the moment, before they showed the replay and stuff like that, which the referee is in the moment, obviously. The arm did look kind of like it was limp, and the referee doesn't know there's 1 second left or two seconds left on the clock when he's stopping the fight. It did look like maybe he went limp for a second, but obviously, as soon as he called the fight, Neil was fine. It's tough, but this is what me and my friends watching the fight were talking about. Once you call off the fight, even if there's a half a second left, when you call off the fight, can you reinstate and start the fight back? Well, I'm sorry, it was a mistake. I don't know. I thought those things were like the judge's gavel hitting the thing. Like, that's the rule. Like, boom. It's when you call something, made a mistake, but I can't, you know, you can't play it off. And okay, round two, guys. It just sucks for both, honestly, both fighters. But for Matthews, he was looking so good and, you know, having his way. And then Neil does what the emotional ride of a fight, everything's on the line. And then boom, that relief, that exhale, the ref stopped the fight. I did it. Ooh, to get back into the fight moment, to fight the mind frame that you were just in, it's tough. And obviously every fighter is a little bit different to get back in that. Luckily for me, that's never happened, but I can see how that would be a huge adrenaline rush and drop at the same time. Like, you're excited, you won, you're exhaling, everything's over, you know, and then, oh no, it's not over, you got to fight. So that's a little bit of a shakeup there. But Neil did what he always does, shows us that he's a true veteran, showed us that he's always in the fight and comes back and wins this thing. It's it just sucks for both fighters, because Neil doesn't get his fair shake because people are saying this, and then Jake doesn't get his fair shake because people are saying that the fight was called. I honestly don't know the rules or the order that this should go in. But like you said, whenever people try to push back or debate the things and try to get things overturned, it doesn't go well, you know. But by the book, in the moment, that's what I would go off of. If the referee call, even if it's an accident, if you call the fight, then the fight's called. You know, whether they want to rebook a rematch or do something else, that's on the company and the fighters. But whatever rules are in place, they shouldn't be a gray area. It should be, whether it's the right call or the wrong call, if it's a call and it's in the books that once it can't be restarted, then that's what it should have been.
Yeah, I think that's a fair take for sure. It's a tough one. Like, we've seen this happen many times before, and it usually does end and the guy pops up and makes like the what the fuck face and they're all pissed off. But yeah,
we sat in the Robbie Lawler Ben Askren fight. Remember that? Yeah, there's been a few over the years, but they didn't start them again. You know what I mean? The fight was over, whether it was a good call or a bad call. That's what, like, I didn't know that night. I was wondering, like, what the hell is going to happen?
Yeah, I feel like if there was 15 seconds left or 20 seconds left, like, you have to just call the fight is over. He kind of got the referee bailed out by the fact that it was like stop, and then the horn went right after it. He was like, no, it was actually just the end of the round. But yeah, I just think he was too trigger happy and wanting to stop that too in that submission. Like, Neil, I think, was still adjusting and moving, and yeah, like, you got to make sure that the guy's out, especially with a blood choke, right?
Right. And what ref, how many high level fights has this guy ref? I'm not sure, you know. It's not a big many, moment. Yeah. It sucks for everybody involved.
Yeah.
The fans included.
Yep. So your gut says probably not overturned, or do you think Matthews, they might actually have a case here? I mean, it's commission dependent. You know, some people don't like, you know, basically admitting that their referee messed up, but some of them are more forthright.
I'm asking because I don't know. What are the rules? When a referee does say, okay, fight's over, and waves it off, like, what are the rules? That's what it should be going off of.
Yeah.
Even if it was the wrong thing, we can't bend the rules and change them for different times, you know, whatever works for the moment, whatever the rule book is, that's what it should be. And if we need to readjust those rules as the sport continues to go and evolve, you know, we need to go back to the rule book and rewrite some things. But whatever the rules were that night, that's what has to be followed. That's why they're there.
Yeah, totally fair. And I don't think this is a situation where you could have used like replay even or anything like that. So yeah, once you make the definitive call, it's got to be done. So we will see what happens with that, how the appeal goes. But yeah, Neil Magny now, 24 UFC wins. Only Jim Miller has more with 27. So we'll see.
Right. Number two all-time winner in the UFC. And coming from the Ultimate Fighter, dude has an incredible career, man.
It's crazy. I wonder now if he's still going. I wonder if anyone's ever going to make it to 30 UFC wins. Like, you kind of look at anyone who's 22 and over, it's all like you and Max, John Jones, a lot of guys who are no longer in the sport. Jim Miller and Neil are obviously still going, and they're 1 and 2, but I don't know, 6 more wins for Neil and 3 more for Jim. I don't know if they got the time.
One day somebody's definitely going to hit 30 because guys are starting younger and getting in training younger, and, you know, somebody's going to hit 30.
Yeah, maybe like Raul Rosas Jr. or something.
Yeah, right.
Like 6 at 21. So we'll see.
Right, exactly. There you go.
Yeah. All right. Well, I wanted to touch on that before we get into UFC 320. We have you here, Dustin. We can't not talk about the lightweight division. Kind of a slow point. There hasn't been a ton of fights booked really since Ilya won the title back in June. You had your fight with Max. As far as I can tell, right now, only 4 of the top 15 are officially booked. Let's talk about the fights that are happening first before we get into some that we think should happen. We'll start with obviously the one that I think is most important to you, UFC Rio, October 11th. Mateusz Gamrot stepping in against Charles Oliveira. That's very exciting. He pitched hard for it. He made his case. Charles seemed a little reluctant at first, but then he accepted it. How happy were you, I guess, to see first Gamrot get this type of opportunity that he's been working to for a long time now?
Man, I was super, super happy for him. I was campaigning on his side. I was reposting stuff and like, put him in. He's ready, because I knew he was ready. Then I saw some articles, Charles saying guys are saying they would take it, and then they behind the scenes, they would back out. But I knew Gamrot, if he said it, he's in. This guy's, his nickname's the Gamer for a reason. He wants smoke. He wants to get in there with the best guys in the world. And His grappling skills are incredible. Obviously, I've had a lot of camps with him, trained alongside him. I know he competed in ADCC years ago, and the guys grew up wrestling. He's a very high-level jiu-jitsu practitioner, very high-level wrestler. His striking is really evolving, and he's a good striker now. It's a tough fight for both guys. It's going to be a very high-level fight. I think Charles is going to have a really tough time getting Gamrot down if he can. And, I'm excited for him, dude. He actually asked me to corner him. It's just too short notice. I was on a trip when he asked me. I would love to be there and go to Rio and corner him, a friend, a teammate, training partner. But I have family flying into Louisiana that exact day. My wife's baby showers that weekend. It's just like really bad timing.
Yeah, well, this is you can give him obviously tons of support, advice, things like that. What kind of advice like could you give him? Obviously, he's got a very different style from you. I don't think you want to tangle too much with Charles on the ground, where Gamrot's saying like, I'm going to take him down. Like, I want to mess with him on the ground. So he's like diving headfirst into that pool. But given you spent that experience with Charles, is there any helpful advice you think you can give in a matchup like this?
Couple things right off the top of my mind when I think about fighting Charles is Charles is a very front and back fighter. You need to be more lateral. Gamrot needs to use footwork. Be all the way in or all the way out. With a guy like Charles, he's long and strong in the clinch, and he uses it very well. He'll throw front kicks and then get into the clinch, smother your boxing. And but I think Gamrot, with his wrestling experience and he'll be able to pick where the fight goes. If he wants to stand up, he can do that. If he wants it to the ground, he can take it there. You know, if Charles tries to get him to the ground, I think he's gonna pass the test of the takedown defense everywhere against the fence, you know, in the open. Gamrot's a really good scrambler, really good wrestler. But just don't stay on the straight line with Charles. He throws heavy, throws good knees, throws good push kicks, and he's tricky in the clinch. He uses different angles and different timing in the clinch. I think, like I said, and I've said this in a lot of different fights for guys, giving them tips, is like, don't be in that middle ground. Be all the way out in kicking range, or be all the way out in punching range, and move laterally. Don't sit in front of him. He's going to clinch you. He's going to just try to smother what you're doing. And he does it great. I wish I would have known those things before I fought Charles, you know, but until you get in there with these kind of guys, you don't know, what you're going to feel.
Do you worry about Charles's turnaround here? I think, you know, on paper, this is a less scary fight than the Fiziev, from like the knockout element and, you know, what happened with Topuria and making this, you know, maybe Gamrot's still able to do that. But like, just if this wasn't even any opponent, do you like the idea of this quick return after a knockout like that?
You know, that was a pretty devastating knockout. Anytime somebody gets put out like that, I definitely don't recommend them turning around as quick as possible. You know, take some time off. We've seen it before with Volk. We've seen it time and time again. You know, you just need to recover, regroup, let things heal, take care of your brain, take care of yourself. But even turning around that quick, you know, Gamrot's knocked people out in the UFC before. Mm-hmm. And with 4-ounce gloves, even though we don't think of Gamrot as a power one-hit puncher, you know, he is. Everybody is with 4-ounce gloves. So it's a dangerous fight, man. Dangerous fight for Charles, especially if he can't get the takedown and he's forced to stand in front of Gamrot, you know. So we'll see. Because Gamrot's boxing game has improved so much over the last 2 years. I think he's going to surprise a lot of people.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting if it turns into a standing fight. It's compelling on the ground as well, too, just because Charles' most submission wins in UFC history, as we know. It's a long time to...
And Gamrot's a crazy guy. He's going to throw himself into that. He's one of the guys in the gym who's hunt for the toughest rounds. If it's jiu-jitsu class, whoever's the most decorated, whoever's the best, he's trying to get every round with him. You know, he throws himself into that fire. And when he's saying this leading up to the fight, I want to test his ground game. He's not joking. This isn't the switcheroo where he's going to try to kickbox the whole time. This guy wants that.
Yeah, not lip service. Yeah, I mean, no. I saw you guys doing many rounds when I was down there at ATT, so don't doubt anything you just said there. He goes hard. So very much looking forward to that. That's the matchup between currently number 4, Charles, and number 8, Matheus Gamrot. So that's a big fight for both. Another confirmed bout, officially confirmed as of moments ago, number 9, Beneil Dariush, against a former opponent of yours, Benoit Saint-Denis, number 13 at UFC 322. That's a fun one. I know you'd like... There'd been talks of you fighting Dariush for a number of points over your career. It didn't happen, but you fought Benoit. He had the 2 losses in a row. He's bounced back with 2 solid wins now. What do you make of this matchup here?
I think it's going to be a grappling match. But I think Benil's going to win. I do. You know, I've never rolled around or competed against Benil, but obviously I've been in there with Benoit. And it just didn't, you know, all respect. I know he's working hard and he's dedicated to his craft, but all respect, I didn't feel that in danger. I didn't feel like, I don't know. I just think Benil is going to be too much experienced and against the best guys in the world to get submitted or to lose a decision to Benoit Saint-Denis.
Yeah, I mean, Benil's he's number 9 now, but he's been in the top 10 for like pretty much all this decade. So I think the only thing that took him out was that crazy Alex Hernandez knockout loss, and then he worked his way back in. So yeah, he's steady and sturdy. We'll see what happens. This is a big moment for Benoit because he hasn't really been able to get over that hump yet.
But respect to Benoit, man. He's asking for the toughest guys. You know, nobody wanted to fight Rufy, and then now he's coming in here fighting another veteran. You know, I love to see that. Those young, hungry guys who want the toughest fights, and he's putting himself out there. So, respect, man.
Yeah, looking forward to that one too. UFC 322 is shaping up very nicely in New York on November 15th. This fight is kind of in the middle. It's not officially confirmed, but Armin Sarukian has kind of been out there saying that they're working on maybe doing him and Dan Hooker. Could happen in Qatar. Obviously, you know, Sarukian's been in your gym at ATT. You fought Dan Hooker. Do you think this was the right fight? I mean, Armin's been out for, by the time this happens, it'll be close to a year since everything fell apart for him with his title shot in January. Dan Hooker's had a lot of injury layoffs and hand issues and stuff like that, but it seems like he took the appropriate time this time. Definitely an interesting matchup. What do you think of this one?
Yeah, it's going to be a striker versus wrestler. You know, I think Dan wins the exchanges, but can he stop the takedowns? Can he stop the pressure of Armin? Armin can kickbox very well, but Dan's length and his willingness to take damage, I think, could put Armin in a lot of tough spots. I really wanted to see Hooker versus Gaethje. You know, as a Carnage fight fan, I knew that was going to be a head-on collision. I was excited about that. It sucks it fell apart. You know, that's the fight I really wanted to see because that's must-watch TV right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would have been a great fight. I'm going to pull up the lightweight rankings here. So, yeah, I mean, I guess it makes sense rankings-wise. I mean, Armin was going to have to fight down given the situation and get a win here. And big opportunity for Dan. He's been on a nice streak here. And I'm sure for him, he loves this.
It also comes down to who's going to get that next title fight at lightweight.
Yeah.
You know, because there's a few guys you could put in there and a few fun matchups you could put to see who is that guy who gets there. But we never know which way the UFC is going to go. So I'm sure they have something crazy planned out of left field. We don't even know.
Yeah. So let's get into that. There is many guys in this rankings right now, no fights booked for them. It's been kind of a standstill. We'll start at the top with Ilya Topuria. I assume he's not fighting this year, and they're probably holding him for one of the first Paramount cards, trying to kind of blow the roof off with a big event. We thought it was kind of a three-way race between either Armin, Justin Gaethje, or Paddy Pimblett to get the fight with him. But if Armin is fighting Dan Hooker, then that, I guess, brings it down to a two-horse race, unless you have another idea. But who do you think Ilya is going to fight? Will it be Paddy? Will it be Justin or someone else?
If I was a matchmaker, it would be Armin versus Gaethje. Winner of that gets title fight. Hooker versus Paddy. Winner of that's next in line. You know, that's the way I would have laid it out. Those are fun fights, exciting fights, fights that you don't know which way it's going to go. And I think that's more of the pecking order. You know, Gaethje's said it before, he only has a few left. He's put himself back in position now with his last fight. You know, I think him and Armin are those two guys right there, you know.
Yeah, I just say Ilya's fighting in January, though. He's been out for a while. He only fought once this year, so I assume they want him back soon. I personally would like to see him fight. I don't want to wait for all those fights to play out. So if you had to pick, though, like if we're getting an Ilya fight in January, say, and it is either Gaethje or Paddy Pimblett, which fight would you rather see?
Gaethje.
Yeah. Do you think Gaethje. That's a harder fight for Ilya?
Man, he's such a precise striker and his timing's so good. And Gaethje, like I said before, puts himself in harm's way. It could be a horrible matchup for Gaethje, you know, if he lunges in and gets sniped at one of those clean shots. But also it could be a tough fight, you know, on the other side. It's tough, man. You know, playing matchmaker and how the fights go in my head, it's tough. Anything could happen in there. But here's one thing I'm sure of, respect to Paddy and everything he's done. I don't think a win over Michael Chandler you know, on the streak that Chandler's on, the way his fights have been going, deserves a title shot right away. I know he's exciting and people are talking about him, but I would like to see him fight one more top five guy, one more tough test, and then we could talk about title fights for him. I think it's a little bit rushed for Patty if we're talking about him and Ilya.
I tend to agree, but we know the UFC likes to, you know, sometimes they see the dollar signs and an opportunity and people slide in and it just works out that way. I just wonder if that, you know, Ilya versus Patty, the first Paramount show, like all that promotion, I just wonder if it's too tempting for them. But I know, like, if it's Gaethje, that would be an incredible fight too.
Yeah, I hope it's Gaethje. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, that moves us down. If Gaethje is fighting Topuria in your mind, where does that leave number three, Max Holloway? I feel like he's kind of a little bit the odd man out. Do you do Max Holloway and Paddy Pimblett then? Because he would be the one available in that top five. Or maybe if Charles wins or...
Even though Max has a loss to Topuria, it was at a different weight class. And, you know, Max has fought multiple times since then. Yeah, put Max in there with Pimblett. That's a fun fight to find out, you know, what level Patty's really at. Now, there's a bunch of fun fights for Max, though, man. There's a bunch of fun fights for Max. I would love to see Max versus Hooker as well. I'm a fan of both guys, and I know that would be a fun fight for everybody.
Yeah, I think that might be what ends up happening for Max is, like, these fights will play out. I think he said in one of his
He's out for a little while, you know?
Yeah, I think he hurt his hand. So if we don't see him till March or April or something, then probably lines up for these other guys are going to fight and then his opponent will present itself. So we'll see what happens with Max Holloway there. That'll be interesting. Okay, slide down. You think Patty, you can fight any of those guys. Number 10, Fazeev is injured, so we don't know when he'll be back. Number 11 is Hanato Moicano, who's lost a couple in a row. I know at one point they had linked him to Nazim Sadyakov. I don't know if that's happening or what kind of thing it is, but I feel Moicano might get a tough break and have to maybe fight outside the rankings after a couple losses.
Yeah, and that's the way it goes. You got to reprove yourself where you belong, and that's how it is, man.
Yeah. Okay. Number 12, Michael Chandler. What do you think? It seems like he's wanting to sit and wait potentially for this White House card. Him and Conor McGregor are both saying they're going to fight each other. That's a long ways away, still like 8 months out. Do you think we finally get McGregor versus Chandler at the White House?
Man, I've talked about this fight so many times over the last year. I think this is a great fight for Conor. If he is going to return, this is a great fight. Stylistically, it's a great matchup for him to fight Chandler. But we talk about Moicano on a little bit of a streak. Him and Chandler that's a fun matchup to me as well. You know, but who knows? We've been hearing about the Chandler-Conor fight for a while. We'll see if it finally happens.
Yeah, I know. If it's not him, we'll go down number 14. Like, Grant Dawson deserves an opportunity to fight up. Him and Chandler could be good. Grant Dawson, dude, freaking 11-1-1 in the UFC and ranked 14. This guy needs a big fight.
Yeah, he had his big moment to be the breakout, and he stumbled in his fight with Bobby Green. I think that one hurt him. But overall, his record, and I know the guy, his work ethic, and he's committed to the sport. He just needs that one big win, that one big name that propels him into the top, because he's going to get there one way or another. This guy is a true martial artist and loves fighting. I don't know if there's anybody that I've trained with that loves the sport more than that guy.
Yeah, he's been on such a roll. It's unfortunate. Yeah, he had the stumble against Green, but I think he's got to get a big fight. Maybe you give him Fazeev or one of these guys. I don't know if him and Moicano would want to fight being in the same gym, but yeah, lots of good fights.
Yeah, a lot of fun matchups for him if they give it to him. But I wouldn't want to see them two fight just because the gym and everything else, you know, the training partners, there's enough other high-level guys to fight.
Yeah, definitely. And then Mauricio Hufi, number 15, he had a tough one, but we'll see what he ends up doing. I think some of those guys in kind of the 10 to 15 range will probably get matched up with each other. But I just want to go back there to what you said. Do you think like this White House card is – Conor McGregor versus Michael Chandler an appropriate headline for it, or would you give John Jones the opportunity he clearly so badly wants to be the main event of that card?
Well, John would be fighting for a title, right?
I guess so. I guess it would be him and Aspinall.
Well, then you have to
we'll see what happens.
You have to put that over.
Like, I know he really wanted to fight Pereira, win or lose. I don't know. But yeah, I'd assume it would be Aspinall. That would be the biggest fight.
Well, then you have to. Then there's no question about it. You put the title fight above, you know, an exciting fight that people have been waiting for. Title fights are always headline the card.
Yeah. Well, so you could see a world where they do both. John and Connor both on the card.
Yeah. Yeah. But Connor would have to be co-main. I don't know if he would like that.
Yeah, well, he's negotiating directly with the Trump administration instead of the UFC. That's what he claimed. I'm not sure I buy that one, but man, I know there's a lot of feelings with him and Chandler, but 4 years off, like by the time, if that fight happens, it would be since your guys' trilogy fight. Like, how hard would it be for any athlete to come back and fight someone at the highest level on that stage after such a long layoff, injuries, and then whatever else this man has probably put his body through in the past several years?
I think it all comes down to how committed he is to the sport and to being a martial artist. If he's in the gym every day, doing the right things, getting the real rounds, and he's focused, I don't think it's going to be a huge, huge deal. He's fought his whole life. But if he's out partying and training here and there, and you know, it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. I think Dana White said they're going to start like really making that card come February. So still a lot of time for things to happen for better or worse. But okay, that kind of puts a bow on our matchmaking of the lightweight division. Hopefully some fights get made here soon because it's too many good fighters here to stall. Oh, last one on actually. Do you think Islam Makhachev, who's still ranked number one, does he ever come back to this division? Or do you think it all depends on whether he wins or loses against Jack Della Maddalena?
Yeah, it's going to depend whether he wins or loses. But also, man, it's not easy to put on the weight. He's already a very solid lightweight fighter. To have the freedom to bulk up and put on more muscle and fill out your frame the way your body wants to be, to go back down to 55 is going to take some time, I think, to really be at a calorie deficiency and lose some of the muscle he's putting on. Because like I said, I know for a fact, he doesn't make 155 easy. So now it's going to be even tougher. He could do it, but it's going to. Yeah, he could be completely done at lightweight. It might be too hard for his body to get back down and compete at that level because he's not a small guy at all.
No, it was really interesting when right after he vacated the title, I talked to him and he said he was having a lot of time putting the mass on and keeping it. And it was like too much eating and like he didn't feel good. But I think he's maybe figured that out because he looks really good in some of the videos he's been putting out lately. But curious next time we hear from him, like how that worked for him, because he seemed like he was not having a fun time trying to figure out how to keep that mass on.
Right. Yeah. And I think when we see him in there across from another welterweight, he's going to fill the part. He's gonna look like a welterweight fighter. He's a big guy, you know. Mm-hmm. And I'm excited about that fight. You know, if JDM's takedown defense holds up and he makes Islam have to be in front of him, you know, it could be a long night. But
yeah,
that's
super.
So much easier said than done, man, when these guys are on your body and on your legs, and it's so much easier said than done.
Yeah, for real. Well, Jack Della Maddalena did some media in Perth. He was saying he's expecting a lot of grappling very early on, so he at least knows what's coming his way. It will be interesting to see how Makhachev performs there, but we'll talk about that as it gets closer on. For now, it's about UFC 320. This episode of the Bonfire Podcast is brought to you by MyBookie. For all of your UFC 320 betting needs, make sure to use MyBookie and the code word BON, that is BOHN, for a special first-time player bonus when you sign up, whether it's straight picks, money lines, over-unders, or prop bets for exact rounds and finishing methods, MyBookie has everything you need to enhance your UFC 320 experience and make it a night to remember. Please, of course, make sure to bet responsibly. Huge fight card this weekend, two title fights. Let's start with the co-main event for the Bantamweight Championship. Mirab Dvalishvili against Corey Sandhagen. A lot of fun here in this fight. Curious off the bat, though, this is Mirab's third title defense since January, like hyperactive schedule. If he wins, he'll be the eighth champion to get three title defenses in 1 year, which so like pretty rare stuff. Is there a downside to the schedule, though, doing three championship camps back to back to back? The Umar fight like wasn't super damage heavy. He dominated Sean O'Malley. That probably factors into how he's feeling going into this one, too.
Yeah, every fight is different. But the kind of mindset and work ethic that seems that guy has, I don't know him. Mm-hmm. Like, that's where he thrives, in the pressure, in the grind, pushing his body. As long as no injuries are lingering or he's not overdoing it to where his body doesn't have time to rest, I think he's going to be perfectly fine to compete again three times like that.
Yeah, and he wants to do a fourth to close out the year, which would be the first guy to ever get four title defenses in a calendar year, which would be nuts. But he's got this one to get through as well. Big moment from Rob, though. He's at 97 takedowns landed in his UFC career. If he gets three here, he'll be the first with 100 takedowns in an octagon tenure, which would be pretty remarkable. But he says, Dustin, that he is going to stand with Murat or with Corey and strike with him. He said 90% of this fight will be stand up. And that was in response to his coach saying, no, we're actually just going to grapple him. So I don't know what's going on in the game plan side of Team Murat, but when you hear that, like, I'm going to stand and strike with Corey for 90% of this fight, does that sound like mind games to you or something that he might actually do?
It could be. I just think that's Corey's best way to best path to victory. Right. I think we're going to see the 100 takedowns. That's what I think we're going to see.
It's always interesting, though, because, like, that's, if you look at the great champions through UFC history, like John Jones, George St. Pierre, these guys, like, they not only were able to beat you, they were able to beat you at what you thought you were best at coming into the fight. So I don't know if Marab's getting into that territory of, like, he's so good and so dominant, but if it plays out that way, that would be pretty crazy. But like you said, if you told Corey Sandhagen the fight will be 90% standing today, he would probably take that every day of the week and more. Mm-hmm. Does Corey need to keep this fight standing, though, in order to win? Like, does he have his own style?
He's awkward, man. He has his own style that I think is very tough to deal with. But no, he doesn't have to. He's good everywhere. It's just the dominant positions that Marab's able to get into from the top. You know, it's going to be really tough to create space and find those submissions. He doesn't leave a lot of space for that type of stuff. He's really, really good at what he does. And to do what Corey needs to do, you need space, or you have to be able to create space somehow to get those legs in there, to get the, you know, to pivot your body. But no doubt about it, Corey has the submission skills to submit anybody on the roster at 135. It's just, will that space be there? Will he be able to create that space?
Murab is being, like, open that he wants to be more finish hungry. Like, does him maybe being more aggressive with the submission attacks on the ground? It worked against Sean O'Malley, but, like, if you're Corey Sandhagen, are you wanting that? Like, to try
to
be more?
Yeah. For me as a fighter, if I'm fighting, if I'm looking to submit somebody from my back or, you know, or from whatever on the ground, I need them attacking stuff to create space for me to counter, move my hips, you know, find those angles. If a guy's just laying on top of you, half guard, side control, not creating a lot of space, the ref's thinking about standing it up the whole fight, just minutes are ticking away. It's really tough to deal with that, man, and create the space, especially against somebody like Murab, who's the best at it.
Mm-hmm. Trevor Whitman actually said on the Corey's coach said on the Countdown show that they're actually wanting to grapple and wrestle in this fight, which is kind of interesting. I asked Corey when I interviewed him last week, like, are you focusing more on, like, stopping the initial takedown or the chain wrestling that happens, the get ups and things like that? And he said the latter, like the chain wrestling, the get ups. Is there, when you're fighting a guy like this, does there need to be some degree of acceptance that he is going to get you down and it's more about what you do from there than stopping the initial shot?
You know, certain guys, like, especially like a Marab, you got to think you're going to get taken down. You don't want to go in there accepting takedowns. You're going to try to fight tooth and nail to stop each single one of them. But the chance of you being on your back at some point is highly likely. So you just plan to create that space, to get your knees back to the mat, to find a way to find the wall and walk back up. And, you know, you do play that out all out in training camp over and over, reps. It's not fun training camps for me personally. Anytime I've had to fight a guy like Islam or Khabib or any of those kind of fights, the camp is grueling, way more grueling for me than a getting ready for a striker. Or just an average mixed martial arts fight. When you're fighting a specialist like that, yeah, it takes a toll on your body throughout camp, for me personally anyway.
Mm-hmm. Right now, my bookie has, as we start fight week, Murab Dvalishvili -400, Corey Sandhagen +285. Does that seem appropriate to you, or do you think that's too wide of a line?
I think that's fair. You know, I think that's fair with what Murab's done. His dominance, I think that's fair. I think that's a fair line.
Yeah. Do you think there's value on Corey as an underdog here? What would be his path to victory if he does win?
Timing a good knee. Man, I really feel like that submission is going to be hard to find, but he could, you know, he could. If I was betting or picking a prop bet of a finish, it would definitely be TKO KO.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. Murab seems like the guy that you need to choke absolutely unconscious or knockout cold, or he's not going to stop until then. We saw that in, like, the Marlon Moraes fight and things like that. So that's
for sure. And to think about the fight as a whole, like, for Corey to win somehow, win a five-round decision, you know, that just doesn't seem possible in my mind. I think he needs a finish.
Yeah, those are always the interesting ones. You're like, that's the least. I mean, I kind of thought about that in the Khamzat fight. I know he was the grappler there, but I was like, if this fight's going to decision, like, I don't think he's going to be the guy who wins it. And then he wins one of the most dominant decisions we've seen in a title
fight. Right, right. Same with me. I thought he would slow down, and he didn't. You know, I thought fourth round, fifth round would be a whole different fight, and I was wrong.
Yep. Well, we'll see about that one in the co-main. As far as the main event, we will see if it's a whole different fight between Alex Pereira and Magomed Ankalaev. This rematch, before we get into kind of the X's and O's here, I'm curious your perspective on just Alex Pereira's behavior over the past like week or so. If this seems out of character for you, like he's going on Twitter rants and video blogs, calling Ankalaev a shit champion, saying he's a coward, who hid from him at the UFC Performance Institute. Ankalaev was like, that's not true, and went straight up to him when they did like another video and saying no chama and all this stuff. So I don't know, like Alex, just the way he's so stone faced, so ice cold. Usually we haven't seen this type of animation out of him. How do you internalize that? Is that him hyping the fight, hyping himself up? Like
hyping the fight, hyping himself, messing with Ankalaev, trying to get in his head a little bit, just switching things up. You never know with these guys, you know, you never know. But Alex being a underdog in any fight, I think is a good bet, because this guy can change the fight at any moment. You know, I honestly think Alex is going to get his hand raised.
Okay, interesting. I'll ask more exactly how you see that happening in a sec. He said in a couple of interviews this week, I think it was to Brian Campbell, that he was 40% in the first fight, had all sorts of issues going on, training camp injuries, health stuff. When someone says that this close to the rematch, like, I don't know, do you take him at his word? Do you think he's trying to convince himself that he wasn't at his best the first thing? I know you never liked, you know, saying this is what happened in a fight, I went in this way or that way. When you hear him say this in this moment, what does it tell you?
You know, I think he's telling the truth. Whether that stuff needs to be said, you know, it's, I don't know. You know, just like me, I've gone into fights with injuries, and I always feel like if I talk about it, I'm making an excuse or something like that. But I don't feel like Alex is a liar. He's not making stuff up. I'm sure we all go into fights injured and stuff. To the severity of his injuries, I don't know, but I don't think he's a liar. So it might just be part of the mind games as well. These things are tough, man. These things are tough to put together and really find the pieces that make sense. But I just, for some reason, I think Alex is going to do it.
Yeah, interesting. On the flip side, we had Magomed Ankalaev saying that Alex felt greased in the first fight. He was very slippery. Haven't heard a nice greasing accusation in a minute. This is like straight out of 2006 or something. But I don't know. Like, he was the one in there. He said he doesn't want to accuse him of anything, but essentially accused him of it. Like, a nice greasing accusation. What do you think of that?
You know, the referee, before you step in the octagon, they check for your cup. They check your mouth guard, and they put their hands on you just to make sure there's nothing on you. I don't see how he could have had something on him. But unless they're doing some kind of witchcraft, I don't know how you get Vaseline'd or oiled up in between rounds.
Well, if you ask Yuri Prohazka, he thinks Alex Pereira might be doing some witchcraft, so who knows what they're pulling.
Exactly. Yeah.
I guess with the last narrative, before I get down to your actual breakdown, why you think Pereira will win, just the rematch element of this. You had so many of them through your career. What do you think each guy kind of takes away from the first fight to bring into an immediate rematch like this? You know, no fights in between or anything like that.
I think Alex needs to keep the distance better, do what got him to be the world superstar we know. Keep the distance and look for those big shots, you know, look for those big knockout punches, look for those big kicks, those big knees, do damage, do what he does best. You know, similar to the advice I gave Gamrot, don't play the clinch game. Don't get put up against the fence. Don't let the time run off the clock. And that's what Ankalaev needs to do. I think he needs to smother Pereira. Don't be in the striking danger in the middle of the octagon. You know, just let him slow down over the rounds, so where that power and that pop is a little bit less, you can see things coming a little better. That's what I think needs to happen.
Ankalaev went 0-for-12 in takedowns in the first fight. He claims too that he wasn't, you know, at his absolute best. It was in the middle of Ramadan, didn't have an ideal camp, all that type of stuff. Do you think he finds more success with the wrestling and actually gets him down, and gets him down with maybe any consistency in this fight?
I don't think any consistency. I think that he might trip him up, get him down here or there. But I think his best bet is to pressure, clinch work against the fence, keep the pressure on him. Don't let Alex use those long limbs, use that power he generates in the open. You know, he just needs to keep the fight close.
Yeah, so as we said, the kicking off fight week here, MyBookie has the line at minus 236 for Megabet Ankalaev, plus 180 for Alex Pereira. You said you think Alex is a good underdog value pick. Tell me why. Why do you think he wins this fight?
I just think he's danced with this guy before. He wants that title back. And he wants to win. You know, he wants revenge. And he wants to show that wasn't him in the last fight. There's a lot of reasons why. And I just feel like he's too dangerous of a fighter to go in there and not find that shot this fight.
You think you see it inside the distance knockout?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a TKO or a KO inside the distance.
Very interesting. And as far as where this would take the division going forward, we'll touch on it quickly. The featured fight on this card is Jiří Procházka versus Khalil Roundtree. That's going to be an absolute banger, right? The bonus checks now, I think. I don't know how you really even break down a fight like this. It's just going to be chaos. I mean, I imagine Khalil's going to try to be the more technical of the two when they're actually in there. But what do you think? Like, how do you think this fight goes?
It's going to be an all-out war. I can't wait to watch that. I'm a fan of both guys. But I think Yuri's going to win that one for some reason. It's a weird position because if Alex does get his belt back, he's beat, you know, do we do another Yuri fight? And I think it's too recent that Roundtree, you know, they just fought to get back in there again. So way down the line, it's tough to call. But in this moment, I think Yuri's going to get his hand raised.
Yeah. Well, I think if you said it there, you said you watched UFC Perth. If it does go that way, Alex and Jiří both win. Do you think this sets up Alex Pereira versus Carlos Ahlberg? And what did you think of his performance and how he'd maybe match up in a title fight like that?
Yeah, it's something new. So it's fun to see a new challenger fight the champ if Alex gives the belt back. But that'll be another fun fight. Two big power punchers. Yeah, of course I watched that fight and I was in awe like everyone else when he put Reyes out.
Mm-hmm. And if Ankalaev wins, I think it sets up any of those fights. Ahlberg's a fresh matchup for him. Roundtree and Procházka are fresh fights for him. So options there would be a new era officially. If Alex loses, could this be it for him? Do you think he goes to heavyweight? He's that spot of having two losses to the champ is really tough. Someone else would have to beat Ankalaev, I think, for him to get back. But everyone's talked about this heavyweight move for so long. Are you wanting to see Alex Pereira at heavyweight if this doesn't go his way?
Dude, I'll watch him fight at any weight class he fights at. I'm a, you know, there's no way he's going back down to 85, right?
No.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that would be his only move.
Vegas. I think he got to Vegas like a week and a half ago. He was 236.
So right. Come on, man. That's crazy. You know, against like the really, really huge heavyweights, he might look smaller, but I bet if he went to heavyweight and filled his frame out and showed up in there 240 or whatever, he would be right in the mix, you know, get a couple wins there and be knocking out the title shot at heavyweight as well. But like I said, I'll watch the guy fight at any weight class.
Yeah. The thing that scares me is like if he gets knocked out bad in this fight or if like Ankalaev has a lot of grappling success, that doesn't make me feel awesome about Pereira being at heavyweight if like that's an issue for him. So we'll see. Interesting times. All right, Dustin, I think that puts a bow on kind of the UFC 320 title fight breakdowns. I really appreciate you doing this. It's always fun. Glad to hear retirement life is treating you well. And hopefully we see you on the desk many times coming up here in the future. Make sure to follow Dustin on social media at Dustin Poirier, the Good Fight Foundation, all these things, Dustin, you're killing it. I really appreciate you doing this.
For sure, man. Thanks for having me back.
All right. Thank you, man. I'm going to take a quick break and be right back to wrap things up. And that does it for another episode of the Bonfire Podcast. Thank you so much to Dustin for taking the time to hop back on here. A great time for him to be discussing all that stuff at lightweight, his UFC 320 analysis and insights. Great stuff there. This man has a bright future as an analyst wherever he wants to be, mixed martial arts, boxing. It's all open to the diamond. Of course, he's got some important life stuff going on, as he said there, but certainly an exciting future for him outside of the cage, in my opinion. Hopefully many more appearances here breaking stuff down. Would love to hear your guys' thoughts. Feedback on everything we discussed, the lightweight matchmaking, the title fights. Give us a comment and please make sure while you're there to subscribe, like, follow, all that type of stuff to support the podcast, because it means a lot to me. As I said off the top, we'll probably be on the way or in Las Vegas by the time you guys are listening to this. Make sure to follow the coverage around UFC 320 on MMA Junkie on my social media feeds, at Mike Bawn on X, at Mike Bawn MMA on Instagram. It all means a lot, and hopefully have some fun stuff for you, not only here, but certainly for MMA Junkie as well. For now, that does it. Thank you so much to my producer, Abby Subban, Kamikaze, for putting the show together. As always, means a lot. Thank you all for your support. And until next week, I will see you back here by the bonfire.